Welcome to the Fairy Whispering Podcast. I'm your host, Claire Silverwand, and I'm recording this intro in a woodland car park which has very pretty views out across Dartmoor towards an area called Mountsland Common, which has some trees on the hill, and then beyond that is Ripon Tor, which is one of my favourite tours on Dartmoor. A tor is basically a high hill with a lot of big boulders on top. That's the simplest way to describe it. And in front of me there's a lovely old tree, and the tree is covered in ivy and moss, and there's a yellow brimstone butterfly fluttering around. It's wonderful to see the butterflies coming back. And right in my car there are some bluebells. So yeah, very surrounded by very pretty views. As human beings, our minds are always going to the past, the future, and it's really difficult to stay in the present sometimes. And I trained how to be a meditation teacher a few years ago, and that was because I'd come out of a very busy career. I was dealing with burnout and anxiety, and so I started to go to a meditation group, and then through that I decided it was something that I wanted to learn to do for myself and to teach others. So I trained as a meditation teacher, and that skill has really helped me throughout my life, and it's something that I've used in my fairy whispering work as well. As a bonus to this episode, I've put a link in the show notes, in the description of this episode, to a meditation that will help you to connect with the fairies. This is one of a series of meditations that I recorded during the 2020 lockdown. And I just transcribed a series of experiences that I'd had with fairies. There were visualisations and dreams that I had. Probably hear traffic going by. where I connected with the fairy realm. So I decided to create a series of meditations. So this meditation I've recorded is part of that series. I had the privilege of speaking with the creative minds behind a captivating new podcast called Black Velvet Fairies. Join us in this episode as we delve into the mystical realm of the Emerald Anvil universe with executive creative director Greg Hale and actor Gretchen Lodge. Together they reveal the innovative storytelling that blurs the lines between fantasy, folklore and reality, brought to life by an award-winning team known for their work on The Blair Witch Project and The Lord of the Rings. Greg and Gretchen guide us through the tale of Lucy, a character whose life is forever altered by a mysterious inheritance linked to her late grandmother. As Lucy embarks on a quest to uncover the significance of these otherworldly paintings, she's drawn into a world where the boundaries between our reality and the fairy planet of Hada blur, revealing a history of human-fairy interactions that have shaped both worlds. You can support the podcast with a donation on my Fairy Whisperer Buy Me a Coffee page, or with a subscription via my podcast Buzzsprout page, and follow us on social media for more fairy encounters and nature musings. It was a really enjoyable chat with Greg and Gretchen, and we also covered some connections with fairy folklore through discussing the story, and I also share some of my fairy experiences. You're listening to the Fairy Whispering Podcast. Enjoy this episode, and I will come back to you at the end with some closing thoughts. The Fairy Whispering Podcast explores guests' encounters with the other world of fairy and ways of connecting with this realm, from listening to messages in owls' hoots, finding a four-leaf clover, chasing rainbows, or inviting a gnome to dinner. I'm Claire Sylvan Wand, a fairy whisperer, researcher, and your guide on this journey. Take my hand and step into the twilight woodland, where they are waiting to meet you. Welcome, Greg and Gretchen. So lovely to have you here.
Yeah, thanks, Claire. Thanks for having us on.
Thank you. Yeah, so happy to be on.
I really love the painting. That is so cool.
Oh, I do too.
This is, I can send you the image. A picture of a woodland where I had a fairy experience.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, nice. Very cool.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah, it's really gorgeous. Cool. The colors are beautiful.
Yeah.
Thanks. I'm writing a book about the fairies in this part of the world and illustrating it myself. So
Oh, wow.
Part of that book.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Gretchen, if you could just talk about your character, and then we'll talk with Greg about the creative idea behind this podcast and the project.
Yeah. So the story follows Lucy, and she's kind of going through this, I feel like this moment in her life where she kind of needs something to shake it up. And so she follows this thread of being contacted about paintings from her grandmother who just passed, who she didn't have a necessarily strong relationship with. There's a lot of, familial things that I think a lot of people experience in kind of troubled and fractured families. So she doesn't necessarily have a close relationship with her, but she feels this urge to follow this thread and go find these paintings. And in doing so, she kind of catapults herself into this strange world where things start happening to her, where her life kind of changes and people come into her life that change her life and vice versa. And it really changes her life in such a huge way. And we follow the portion of it that hopefully leads into something, leads into us knowing more about where this journey takes her. I think, great, right?
I hope so too.
Sounds wonderful. And listeners can see the actual paintings as well, can't they, online, and follow your story on social media.
Right, yeah.
Twitter, yeah. So, Greg, I'd love to know the background to this story. How did it all start?
There's Black Velvet Fairies specifically, which, like Gretchen just said, is a story of Lucy finding these, or getting bequeathed these paintings of fairies and following that path into this world of people who have a connection to this fairy planet called Hada. Mm-hmm. Right, so that's the basic premise of the podcast. But the fairy world that we've created called Hada is the setting for a larger, like, multi-platform fantasy story world that we're calling Emerald Anvil, right? So the Emerald Anvil story world is this big, epic fantasy universe centered on this fairy planet called Hada. And Hada is definitely more Game of Thrones than it is Tinkerbell. It's a very complicated, can be a very dangerous place, because the Hadean, which is what they call themselves, they don't call themselves fairies in this story world. The Hadean are basically just like humans in terms of their capacity for good or evil. So some of the Hadean, some of the fairies that we're interacting with in these stories of Emerald Anvil are good, decent people, fairies, Hadean, and some of them are incredibly evil, just like humans, right? Mm-hmm. Black Velvet Fairies, the podcast, is just one of four stories that we're telling in this world. Black Velvet Fairies is kind of the earthly side of the story, where through Lucy's POV, we're learning about human's perception of this other world. And what Lucy learns is that humans have been interacting with this world for thousands of years, and that humans have actually been transported to this world, and there's been generations of humans that have grown up on this fairy planet called Hada. So that's kind of an earthly backstory. The novel is like a young adult fantasy novel about two kids that get teleported to that planet in the first book called Journey to Hada. And without giving any spoilers away, I will say that there is a direct intersection between what Gretchen's character Lucy does in the podcast and what happens to the kids in the novel. They literally cross paths at some point. So those stories are absolutely connected. Then we are doing a board game called Glim, which is this beautifully illustrated board game, dice-based board game, that we're saying is actually an artifact from this fairy world, that this is a game that the fairies played, that the Hadean played, that humans learned about and brought back to Earth. So we're presenting it as if it's this artifact from Hada itself. And then we're doing an interactive NFT activation called Battle for Hada. So four stories, standalone, so you can listen to the podcast and follow Lucy's story and be okay with just following that story. But it is interconnected with this other stuff. And that's the big picture, long-winded version of the story.
Yeah, and that's what I love about the whole concept, that it overlaps, rather like the fairy world or the other world overlaps into our world sometimes, that you've got all of these different overlaps into, as you say, into the book. You've got experts that come on as well and advise Lucy along the way. I was just wondering, because this idea of overlapping worlds was used in the Blair Witch Project, wasn't it? So I was just wondering, Greg, where that inspiration came from.
The true inspiration for Emerald Anvil, for all of it, was my oldest kid, Cupid, who is now 18. When they were 5 or 6 years old, they loved everything that had anything to do with fairies. And, you know, being a nerd dad, I invented a little fairy character called Shara Leela, the herald fairy to the queen. And started writing letters to Cupid that I would leave for them around the house or in the yard or whatever. And we kind of got more and more elaborate with it. I buried stuff in the backyard for them to find. I made puzzles for them. And it was really about just exploring this fairy mythos with my kid. But I started thinking, like, what would be a fairy mythology, a fairy mythos that I would enjoy as a fantasy, as an adult fan of fantasy stuff? Because look, I like the Tinkerbell movies, and I understand that that is not the end all be all of fairy stuff, which Gretchen knows a lot more about than I do. But like for me, with a 6-year-old kid, I was looking at it through the lens of Tinkerbell, which is fine, but I was looking for something with a little more substance. And what I liked, because of me interacting with my kid in this kind of physical way in our world, I really started with an idea of what would be a fairy-based mythology that really felt rooted in the physical world, right? And not just through, you know, fairy circles or whatever, and just the general idea of there being some sort of fae magic that teleports you or takes you to another world that maybe you never come back from. But trying to explain that mythology, I wanted to be true to our understanding of what a fairy is, but come up with a reason on the other side, meaning in the fairy world, on Hada, that's like a little more sci-fi, like a little more science fiction. Like you could explain it almost scientifically. And that's a little bit of what we did with Blair Witch, right? Which was like, yeah, ultimately, the witch is a supernatural being, and there are kind of unexplainable supernatural things happening, But the connection to that world was very physical in terms of kids go into the woods and disappear, and then there's evidence and there's all sorts of stuff that you can look at in our world that connects you to the supernatural world of the witch. And I mean, and actually it's very astute of you to mention that, because like we, you know, I haven't even thought about it conceptually that way, but that's really what we're doing here too, right? Is you have this supernatural to us, to the Hadean, it's not supernatural at all, but to us, Hada is supernatural. And Gretchen's story, Lucy's story in Black Velvet Fairies is exploring that tangible connection. Lucy starts this journey with these paintings that she's literally looking at and knows that there's some sort of connection. She feels it in her bones that there is some sort of connection to something else, right? So that's what Lucy starts exploring.
Thanks for explaining that, Greg. And what I love about Lucy's character, Gretchen, is that she's kind of quite skeptical at the moment, even though she's described as a bit of a geek, isn't she? But she seems quite sort of resistant at the moment to the whole idea of this mystery and fairies. I'm just wondering what your experience and interest in fairies is, Gretchen, because I see that you've had a lifelong interest in them.
Yeah, I definitely have. It was so exciting and so amazing to be able to talk to actual experts and have these conversations with them when we were recording the podcast. It was just all of the information that they brought was so interesting. And of course, like for me as a character, it was like really easy to respond to it because I was so intrigued, you know, with everything that they were saying and all the information that we were getting, not only as the characters, but also that we were digesting as, you know, actors, the actor who played James as well, because he did a lot of the interviews with me. And my personal, I guess, interest with them, I grew up in, you know, I've always been an artist and a creator and a painter. And so had a lot of interest in kind of like old Victorian art, old, you know, like where kind of like the art history of where some of, you know, I grew up painting a lot of florals and a lot of, you know, botanicals. And so I think I was kind of following that thread of where kind of those paintings came from. And so I had a huge interest in Victorian art, and then of course stumbled upon like Cottingley fairies. And I mean, as a kid growing up in, I grew up in Idaho, so it's like, you know, just woods and trees. And I had a lot of opportunity to explore as a kid. And I was like, please, like, come find me. You know what I mean? I always wanted an interaction. I always wanted something, you know? And I think that's natural for any kid to kind of, you know, your imagination is running wild. I didn't have like a phone to go to kind of like numb my senses. I was like truly just exploring my imagination and kind of, you know, creating. And, you know, I think that's where that interest came from, because I was, you know, really truly engrossed in nature and feeling this sort of sense or presence that something else could, or I hoped would, be there with me. And so the Cottingley fairies was like my initial, you know, kind of introduction to it. And I was like, oh, you know, so jealous. Like, you know, I was like, oh, these girls. I was like, and Greg, I think it's amazing that you did that for your kid. I didn't have anyone doing that, like leaving little clues or things for me. So I just kind of had to create this, you know, world of my own and hope that little gifts and offerings and things that I was leaving for these things that I hoped were there playing in the woods with me were being received. And so, yeah, it was very interesting talking to these experts and talking to people who really are so engrossed and so knowledgeable about fairy lore like yourself, because I think there's so many aspects to it. And there is this, there is truly a sense of, you know, if you approach it with kind of respect and you approach it with kind of wanting to understand more about this world, then you may, in fact, have an otherworldly encounter or something that visits you. And I just love this I love the idea that some an encounter like that could be because you've opened yourself up to that world, and it also could propel you into something magical, not like another magical world, but it could propel you into a series of events in your life that otherwise wouldn't have happened, which Lucy does experience. You know, she's skeptical, and because I think she's experiencing things in real time and she's experiencing things in real life. And so, of course, I like to think if something like that happened to me, that I would be brave and courageous and like, yeah, let's do this. Like, yes, you know, but I think you just never know. I'm interested to hear about your encounter if we have time, because I think for Lucy, it's like she wants to believe, she wants to be there for it and really experience these otherworldly things that are happening to her. But they are actually happening to her. So she's, you know, understandably a little scared. Like, how far do I dip my toe into this? What's going to happen if I do? Where is this going to take me? The idea of having, you know, your life as comfortable or as uncomfortable as it is rearranged because you're saying yes to something that's like, you know, it's really frightening, because you're like, I don't know where this is going to take me. I don't know what's going to happen next. I don't know if this is going to, you know, how this is going to change my life. And am I ready to say yes to all those things or be open to all those things?
And I think part of like Lucy's perspective as a, you know, as the character Lucy, part of her, you know, and look, Gretchen so embodies Lucy that it's kind of hard for me to separate Gretchen and Lucy to some degree. And so I would really totally defer to what Gretchen thinks is happening for Lucy. But when I was part of the writing process with me and Jamie Nash, who was the actual writer who put everything down on paper, based on, you know, the starting idea that I came up with, what I always felt about Lucy's relationship with her grandmother is that when Lucy was about six, which is about the age of my kid, her grandmother wasn't pretending to have a relationship with fairies. Her grandmother really did. Mm-hmm. And Lucy just accepted that as a six-year-old that, yeah, I go to grandma's house and I go out in the woods and kind of strange magical things happen. And grandma just explains it as it's, you know, it's the fairies or it's the woods or it's the spirits of the woods. And so now as an adult, Lucy is remembering believing that, right? So part of it in the very first episode, I love that at the end of the first episode, no spoilers, you know, after she finds the paintings where all her defenses drop at the very end, right? She, like you were saying, Claire, like she's very, very cynical and very like arm's length with all this, but she's still doing it. And then by the end of the episode, when she has the paintings and she's kind of had this weird experience, again, no spoilers, she's kind of had this weird experience, those defenses drop for a second. And she really kind of has not a breakdown really, but an emotional release, because I think that's kind of that gate dropping and Lucy saying, okay, I'm going to reconnect with this thing that I once knew. I really knew this as a kid, and now I've got to get back to that childish, you know, ability to be open to that kind of thing.
Now a quick break with some news from me. Hello dear listeners, the Fairy Whispering Podcast is an independent show entirely produced by me. To keep the show rolling, please show your support by becoming a monthly subscriber on the Podcast Buzzsprout website or on my Fairy Whisperer Buy Me a Coffee page, and by following, sharing with a friend and leaving a 5-star review. Also, if you or someone you know has had a fairy encounter or other unexplained encounter, I'd love to hear from you. You can send me your story to claire@fairywhisperer.co.uk. All of these links are in the show description. Thank you. Now back to the episode. Yeah, and children, childhood is such a portal to that world, isn't it? Because I know it's similar to what you were saying, Greg, with my children growing up, that helped me reconnect with that world as well. My creativity, imagination, and we go out on adventures. I mean, they're teenagers now, so don't go out so much, but when they were younger, it was wonderful. We created, yeah, this world between us, and but also as part of that, some interesting experiences as well that I can't explain. It's almost like you were saying, Gretchen, once you open yourself up to this world, then it's like, aha, that person wants to interact with us, or and it's like attracting like or something. I'm not sure how it all works, but it seems to be the way. Or there are people that have experiences that are completely skeptical about anything paranormal and then have a fairy experience from nowhere that completely changes their whole life and their perception of what reality is, which I think those are my favorite ones, actually. When somebody experiences something that they're not totally not expecting. Yeah.
I
So,
think it's amazing too. Sorry, I think it's amazing
yeah.
too to be able to like foster that kind of imagination and that kind of openness to those encounters in a child. Because like you're saying, it's like that it really is, that really is the time when you are kind of like most open to those encounters. And so if you have someone who's like an adult in your life who's encouraging that, or like this isn't like outlandish, like you can actually have an encounter or an experience, or like this is a possibility to experience this other world. I also think that that's really important for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, definitely, especially in this day and age, like you're saying, with smartphones and children from a young age being encouraged by some parents to look at screens from when they're old enough to sit in a buggy. So it's so important to have that connection with the imagination, that connection with possibilities of something that's beyond our realm that we can create with, use our natural abilities to create and connect with something that's meaningful as well. Yeah. Would you like me to share an experience? I've
Yeah,
got time at
absolutely.
the
I
end.
would love that.
Yeah. Okay. I've been writing about this. So I was thinking actually the first experience I had that I feel was fairy was when I was about 19 and I was staying at a friend of my dad's in an old cottage in Somerset. And I was sharing a room with my sister. And it's a very old cottage, the 15, 14, 1500s, that sort of era. And it's just surrounded by fields, no street lighting or anything. I was trying to get to sleep. My sister had already gone to sleep. It was pitch black in our room. And at the end of the bed, I could see a little green light that was about a couple of inches high. I couldn't work out where it was coming from because there wasn't any street lights. There were no lights on in the house. It was the obviously time, it was the 1990s, so it's before mobile phones and anything electronic that would create that sort of green light. And I just lay in bed staring at it, trying to work it out. And I became, it didn't feel threatening, but because I couldn't work out what it was in my mind, I just pulled the duvet over my head and tried to get to sleep because it just, it's beyond my understanding of what it could be. And then the next day, I searched the whole room. I made sure there wasn't any lights coming from anywhere. I could find anything. So it's only in retrospect, looking back now from hearing other people's experiences of fairies and also UFOs. People have seen UFOs in their rooms that are like lights. That I thought this has got to have been something to do with the land, to do with fairies. That's my feeling. So that was my first experience. And then after that at university, I had an experience when which involved taking substances. Partying as a student, and I went home. I felt really dreadful, and I was trying to. I'd gone to sleep, and I'd woken up to get some water, and I was sleeping on a mattress on the ground, on the floor, in my room. There was street light outside, so it wasn't completely pitch black in my room, and I had a fig plant by beside the bed. Call them rubber plants as well. They've got big shiny leaves. And I just glanced over this way, and at the corner of my eye, I saw a little person sat in the plant.
Oh, wow.
And it was just very brief. And my immediate feeling was that it was an elf. That's what came to me. And I couldn't, because it was dark, I couldn't work out colours, but I had a feeling that it was earth, wearing earthy colours. It had dark skin, dark eyes. And it was just a brief few seconds sighting. Since then, writing about the experience as I have been in the last week, I thought, why did I think it was an elf? So I researched elves in Wales, because I went to university in Wales, and there's a type of elf. I've forgotten the name, I haven't got it written down in front of me, but there is a type of elf like fairy that lives in that part of Wales in the valleys, and they hide in dark places. So it was dark, but everything I was reading, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I haven't researched this before. This experience. And now all these things it's saying about these beings, it's like really resonating with me.
Oh my
So,
gosh. Well, I love when you mentioned the UFOs. I loved one of my favorite parts of the podcast was Greg Newkirk was a paranormal researcher that we had as a guest. And I think you've heard that episode, Claire. Greg is a very serious paranormal researcher that actually comes at things with a lot of skepticism. He's really trying to look at it as like, I don't know what this is, but it's something, and let's figure it out, which I love his approach. I thought he was a great guest, but I loved what he was saying about the crossover between, what might feel like an extraterrestrial experience, like an alien being in your room, or a ghost being in your room, or a fairy being in your room, could all be the same thing, right? And I just thought that was such a such an interesting thing, because like you were talking about with your experience, that is this kind of like universal seeming experience that a lot of people have, right? So you can't just discount it, right? You have to, there has to be some explanation for it. And I loved that, that it could be fairies. I mean, why not? Why couldn't it be fairies? I really like that part of that episode.
And I'm interested in how we interpret it as well. So why did I immediately recognize it as that, as fairy, and not as an ET or a ghost?
Did you have the same fae, the same feeling that it was something fae when you saw the green light in the cottage as well? Or was that just
I didn't know what it was. I just couldn't work it out. And it's only retrospectively what I know about fairies and the land, and the fact that it was surrounded by farmland. And I thought could have been nature spirit. So that's my feeling, that it was something connected with that land rather than a ghost or a alien or something.
I think we also talk a lot about like not only why the encounter happens, but then how it changes you in like moving forward. And do you have a feeling that it was for a specific reason at that time in your life, or that it changed you moving forward?
The one at university, or the, yeah, it did, because when the interesting thing was that I was focusing on the landscape for my art degree that I was doing. I was focusing on my connection with the landscape, and I was going out and taking photos of me with friends in the land and paintings. And so it was really, and I only put two and two together afterwards, really, so looking back. Oh, yeah, well, I was really focusing on connecting with the land. And so that would make sense that something from the land would connect with me. And when I went home from university, I just started drawing fairies. And I hadn't drawn them on my course. And it's something that I hadn't drawn since a child. And these fairies that I was drawing weren't like a typical Tinkerbell type of fairies. They were more just very unusual looking. And it was only after that, and I hadn't seen Brian Froud's work at that stage. It's only after that that a friend of mine said, "Oh, have you seen Brian Froud's fairy artwork?" And I thought, ah, yes, that's the kind of fairy that I relate to. Something that's very connected to the landscape. And, you know, if you look at a tree, then you see it emerging from the tree or from the rocks. Yeah.
I love his work. Do you know, I don't know, I've loved, gnomes and fairies, basically anything that he did when I was a kid. But do you know, does he come from a place of like, does he say that he has experiences or had experiences that he's
Because I went to see him because he lives up in Chagford, which is only about 20 miles from me. I live in Devon. And he did a talk in Chagford at the church last June. And he was talking about some of his fairy experiences.
I mean that totally makes sense, because there's always, especially when I was a kid, there was something about, and this is kind of like, what I'm attempting to do or what we're attempting to do with Emerald Anvil, is like there was something about his work that felt very rooted in reality. Like it felt like, oh yeah, that thing, even as outlandish as they might appear, it's like, oh yeah, that's connected to our reality somehow. And not all fairy art is. Like a lot of fairy art to me feels very detached from anything that feels earthly, but his stuff always felt like there was a connection between our physical existence and that being's physical existence, which I also loved with John Cruise. And did you know John Cruise, the art expert? Did
I
you know him?
know of him and his website, yes. And I've got his book on pixies because I'm writing about pixies.
I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah,
But
he's
you know, I
amazing.
yeah, he was amazing. But what I loved about him was like kind of what you were saying, Claire, is like back when people were in nature all the time, especially in the British Isles, everybody believed in fairies because everybody was out there having that connection to the earth. And as things became more industrialized and more urban, that attachment starts going away, and it totally makes sense, right? That they're nature beings, or they're somehow connected to the primal part of our planet, right? And the more we're detached from that, the more we're detached from them. So, I mean, it totally makes sense to me.
And in your story, in the Black Velvet Fairy story, are the fairies connected with? Is part of their message to do with the world and the environment, or have they got another agenda?
In Emerald Anvil, not just Black Velvet Fairies, but in the mythos that we've created for the overall Emerald Anvil world, the Hadean are not necessarily connected to us through nature. Not earthly nature. They're actually connected to us through natural features of their world. On their world, there are things that to them are completely natural, to us are completely supernatural, but they have portals built into their world that took them thousands of years as beings to learn how to use. And not only learn how to use, but learn how to use the energy on their planet to fly, right? So everything about them is a learned behavior. They're not born with wings. They manipulate the energy on their planet to make things that look like wings to us. And then they have these portals that are a natural part of their world that took them thousands and thousands of years to learn how to operate, that allows them to project an image of themselves to Earth and interact with humans that they want to interact with. What humans are seeing, why we think of them as little, because on Hada, they're human-sized. Every shape and size that a human would be, they just have the ability to manifest these things. They call them glyphs, not wings. They can manifest these things that allow them to fly. So when they're projecting themselves to Earth to interact with a human, we're seeing a little, basically a little holographic image of them floating in this portal, hovering in this portal, interacting with us. So that's why we have the perception of, oh, they're these tiny little magical beings, because to us, everything about them is tiny and magical until they teleport you to Hada. And then when you're on Hada, you're in this place that's like, okay, this is to us this magical place, but to them, it's just their physical world. So their connection from like an environmental standpoint is more about the environment of Hada than it is about the environment of Earth, because at the crux, that the at the center of the story is basically humans are a part of every religion on Hada. So Hada is a planet, right? Hada, there's like 2 billion Hadean on Hada. It's a whole planet of them. It's not one little kingdom or one little realm. It's dozens and dozens of countries. They call it dominions, right? And humans are a part of, so there's dozens of religions. They have religions too. And humans are a part of every religion for them because they look at the natural world and like, whoever made this world that we're in made these portals to interact with these other beings called humans. So there has to be some religious reason, right? So for some of the Hadean, humans are the pathway to enlightenment, right? We have to interact with humans, but we have to bring humans to Hada because humans complete us. Our interaction with humans is what completes us as Hadean, right? We can't be total beings. We can't reach nirvana or heaven or whatever we call it without interacting with humans. On the other end of the spectrum, there are religions that humans are literally like demons, like the portals were there, like the forbidden apple. The God put the portals there to tempt you, but you were never supposed to use them. And now that you've used them, you've brought demons to our world, and we have to get rid of them, right? So that's kind of the, from a fantasy story world perspective, that's the big conflict in this world,
I
right? Because
see.
the kids teleported to Hada.
Hmm.
Really, the story, for the most part, is playing out on Hada. Lucy's story is playing out on Earth. I won't say, because even Gretchen doesn't know if Lucy makes it to Hada or not. Maybe she does, maybe she doesn't. But the kid's story plays out about a third of the way through the book, and this is not a spoiler, about a third of the way through the book, the kids get teleported to Hada, right? So the kid's story, brother and sister, Morgan and Orion DeLeon, 14 and 11, their story plays out completely on Hada. And at the center of that story is this basically like a planet-wide holy war between the Hadean who think that humans are good and the Hadean that think humans are demons and need to be wiped out. That's kind of you know, the super synopsized version of it. So yeah, that was a very long-winded answer for your
Oh,
question.
it's really good to, it's interesting to hear how, yeah, how they see us, how some of them see us as
Yeah,
demons.
how some of
Yeah.
them see us. And you know, and so part of what I'm doing, you know, as a storyteller is, you know, like I think really all science fiction and all fantasy to a lesser degree, but science fiction definitely, because there is some sci-fi elements to Emerald Anvil, is you're really just exploring human issues through a lens of some non-human mechanism, right? In this case, fairies or Hadean are really a way to explore what does make people into zealots. Like, what does motivate people to kill and murder and maim in the name of religion, right?
Yeah.
Because I think that's something that we're dealing with in our everyday world. And I'm not really, you know, I'm not really qualified to explore that in a real world sense, but I do feel I can explore that as a fantasy writer and create a world where you can look at religious views a little objectively and go, oh, that's kind of crazy that this person believes this, Hadean believes this, and that Hadean believes that. And maybe because it's fantasy, you could look at both of them and say, oh, that makes sense. Because look, in Hada, and this is something that Lucy does start to learn about, the interaction between Hada and Earth stopped almost completely about 150 years ago. Because a human
Yeah.
caused a horrendous thing called the Reaving that destroyed about a third of the planet, made a third of the planet uninhabitable, or at least they think it's uninhabitable. So for the Hadean who believe that humans are bad, they've got a lot of evidence. They just point at one third of the planet being uninhabitable and say, well, a human did that. And a human did that because we allowed connection between Earth and Hada and we paid the price. You know, so you can kind of look at it and go, oh yeah, that they kind of have a point. You know, so the kids, Morgan and Orion, are kind of there are eyes into that world, right? Like, why do they believe this? And why do these other Hadean want to do it? We'll go through hell to defend me and save my life because of their religious beliefs. And what does that mean to them? So yeah. Anyway, I diverged there a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting because people that see fairies quite often see them in pre-industrial revolution style clothing. So
Right.
medieval or, you know, pre-1800 style clothing. So it's like that touches on that idea of once the Industrial Revolution started, then that's when we became more separated from the land. And it's almost like the fairies, with the way that they dress, it's a symbolic way of showing us that this is what you've left behind, this simpler way of life where, you know, clothing was made on a loom or, you know,
Right.
it's yeah.
And we get into and we actually get into that. There is a one of the things that was really fun for me writing the novel. Lucy hasn't gotten into it that much yet, although there is some stuff later. You haven't gotten to it yet, Claire, but we get into some deeper mythology later that talks about some of these connections in the mid 1800s, right? That becomes like the focal point. Lucy figures out that 1850s to 1860s is kind of a focal point. And that's something that we play with is like when the kids go there, like all the Hadean are still in like some sort of mix of between Victoria era clothing, Victorian era clothing, and medieval clothing, depending on where they are. Different Hadean dress different ways, but that idea that that's cut off and their style, and then it makes you think, well, who was influencing who? Like, were humans seeing the way these Hadean have always dressed and we're just like, oh, let me adopt that, and then that became something that humans did?
Yeah.
Or were the Hadean looking at humans and going, oh, I like the way that human looks, I'm gonna make my clothes look like a, you know, like a Victorian era dress, or a Civil War for the United States, like a Civil War era tunic that a man would wear. Was it the other way around? Were the Hadean looking at humans and going, "Oh, I like that those clothes. Let me dress that way." And that's been kind of a fun part of the novel, because the kids show up and the boy's wearing his pajamas and Morgan, the girl, is like wearing, an Adventure Time t-shirt and tennis shoes, and everybody is like looking at them like, "What in the hell is that?"
Great. I love that. It really, really interests me about this crossover between the extraterrestrials and the fairies. Have you read or heard of Jack Vallée's Passport to Magonia, either of you? Where he looks at the whole ET phenomenon and...
Did Greg mention that book? Does Greg
Someone mentioned it. Yes, someone has mentioned it, but I haven't been able to get into it, but it's so interesting.
Yeah, I think Greg Newkirk mentions that in his interview, doesn't he?
Oh,
I do not know that book, but I think that's the book that Greg references, right? That's about that crossover between...
Oh, he might have, yeah. Yeah, it's well
it
known.
Yeah. But I don't know the book personally, no.
So are you going to use any of the real life encounters that people have as a basis for these stories? Because, there's the fairy senses that Simon Young has pulled together over the last, well, since 2014.
Oh, wow.
There's two censuses now, from 2014 to 2017 and 2017 to 2023, and it's worldwide experiences of people that have encountered fairies.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I would love to do that. I mean, we're, one of the things that is going to happen, hopefully this is not too much of a spoiler, but like I said, contact with Earth has been cut off almost completely for about 150 years, but not completely, because Lucy realizes that something has been communicating with her entire life. She's just been ignoring it. And so contact isn't completely cut off, right? And that's part of what Lucy's journey is like, there are still people who are connected. In fact, there are religions on Earth built around this connection with fairies, right? That's the thing that we're exploring on the earthly side. And I really do like the idea. The plan is that this is 9 novels. We get lucky enough and we have some success, the main story of Morgan and Orion is going to be 9 novels, is the plan. I love the idea, and exactly how it would happen, honestly, I don't know, but I do think that a rekindling of that connection is part of the story, right? So I love the idea. I'd love to have the opportunity of connecting what's happening in our fictional world of Hada to people's real world fairy experiences here. I would love nothing more than to do that.
Yeah, there's a really good book that you might be interested in watching.
Yeah.
Called Seeing Fairies.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, Seeing Fairies. It's by Marjorie T. Johnson. And it's from the Lost Archives of the Fairy Investigation Society.
Oh, wow.
Which you can join. I'm a member. You just email Simon Young.
I'll write that down.
He'll send you a certificate to say you're a member.
Really? Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's so cool.
What's it called, Claire?
It's called Seeing Fairies by Marjorie T. Johnson. And it's the Lost Archives of the Fairy Investigation Society.
Oh my gosh, I gotta look that up.
Modern sightings of fairies.
Oh my God.
Fairy Investigation Society.
Yeah. Yeah, which Simon Young has restarted, and that's the censuses that he's pulled together since 2014, part of that regeneration.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I definitely got to look that up. That sounds
cool. I'm absolutely gonna look that up.
I just love Fairy Investigation Society. It's like the best name ever.
It's brilliant.
It's incredible. Yeah. And I love that you're a member. That's amazing.
I got a feeling that Gretchen's going to be a member about 5 minutes after.
I know. I'm like, where's that guy's?
Gotta get on that.
Yeah, exactly. Very excited. What is the Fair Investigation Society do? Like, do you meet up? Do you share stories? Do you share information?
Well, Simon set up a private Facebook group. So once you've joined, you can be part of that. And it's just full of all of us researchers sharing information. So you can ask anything about fairies or, you know, something you're researching, and someone will say, oh, yeah, look at so-and-so.
Oh, I love that.
I really do love the idea of, you know, right now I'm so laser focused on just, because, you know, the podcast just launched, the board game launches in a couple of weeks, the novels about a month after that, and then the NFT thing, you know, we'll see sometime this summer. But I'm so laser focused on all that. I've just got those four iterations of the story in my head so firmly. But I definitely do have been thinking about, like, when do I want to make that reconnection? That's always been part of the story. I don't think that's too big of a spoiler. So I should really get in on this and try to learn, like, what is contemporary thinking on fairies, right? Because I'm sure that thinking has evolved, you know, over the years. And I would love to, like, get a better understanding for the way people look at fairies in the modern world. I think would be great for me.
Yeah, it's fascinating because, you know, people are still having experiences. Yeah. And it's interesting to look at how those experiences are affected by where we are now, you know, whether some experiences have changed since 100 years ago, or whether some of them are the same. Yeah.
Well, there's a thing in the book that, like, in the novel, Morgan's wound, right? Your characters always have to have a wound. Morgan's wound is when she was 4 years old, she saw her mother taken by fairies. Like a fairy teleported her mother away, and she never saw her mother again when she was four. So now 14 in the novel, and for 10 years, her dad ends up in an asylum or a facility because of the incident with her mother. So she's raised by her grandparents, and they've spent 10 years and multiple psychologists and therapists convincing Morgan that what she saw was not real. So really, Morgan's journey at the beginning of the book is reconnecting with this thing that she knew was true when she was 4 years old and has been convinced now that it's not true. So in order for her to make that journey, right, it's like what Gretchen was saying about saying yes to something.
Yes.
She has to say, yes, that's really what I saw. That really happened. I really do believe that a fairy took my mother. She has to reconnect with that truth before she can make her own journey, right? That's Morgan's experience in the first, you know, third of the novel before she gets teleported there, is she has to come to terms with her own understanding of what happened to her.
Yeah, that's very true of fairy sightings, where people, especially where two people see the same thing, where there might be somebody that sees something together, but then one person will hold on to that experience and be like, oh my gosh, that was just amazing. And then perhaps the other person, the other witness, will just totally deny what they've seen. Or, you know, just gradually somehow perhaps forget it.
Yeah.
So the other person is like, do you remember seeing that? And they'd be like, no.
Oh, wow.
Remember that, you know, so that seems to be a common.
I feel like that's so interesting because it really is like, whatever point you are in your own life and your own journey, are you ready for it? Are you ready for something that's going to change your perspective on something, or are you not? You know what I mean? And like, our subconscious is so powerful. We can truly just push something away and be like, no, that doesn't exist. That doesn't, you know, that didn't happen. That's not real. As opposed to someone who's like ready and open and ready for like wherever acknowledging that takes them, you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's super true. And because that's right, even that, because that's true of so many experiences, right? It doesn't have to be a supernatural fairy thing. You can have so many things happen in your life.
Yeah.
Where people have the same, whatever, inciting incident that makes one person change their life because they were ready to make that change. And another person maybe goes in the completely opposite direction. That's so true.
Totally.
Yeah. That's super cool. That's super interesting.
Thank you for your time today.
Yeah.
And speaking with me, is there anything else that you'd like to share about?
No, I mean, I feel like you've introduced, at least me, you've introduced me to more new stuff than I've introduced to you. I'm like super excited about getting into more of this world that's really looking at the serious connection between fairies and reality. So I'm excited to take what I've learned from you and go forward with that information.
I am too. Taking it back to Lucy really quickly, I think something that intrigued me about her story so much was just being able to experience something like that in the modern world and like how that ties into someone who's just like going about their life, living in, you know, in real time in the world, and like how finding other people who are having fairy experiences, having those otherworldly experiences and are totally fine with it. They somehow weave it into their normal life. I think that's so fascinating. And like Greg was saying, I think you've introduced us to so many things, so many like resources and stories and things that do that, you know. It's like you're living your life, but also interweaving these stories and these experiences into it. And I think that's so fascinating.
Yeah, super cool.
Yeah. Well, I kind of feel that it's, for me, it's the way to keep that connection with the child self. Yeah. So many of us lose, and enchantment is so important. I think it's really key to our well-being and, you know, connection with nature. So important. So, especially with what's happening in the world at the moment.
Reconnecting with anything that allows you to ground yourself a little and feel connected to something is probably good. Probably and always has been, right? I think it's
definitely
something in the world that would motivate you to want to do that.
It's wonderful to speak to you both. I really enjoyed it. It's just so exciting what you're working on. It's fantastic.
Yeah, thank you, Claire.
So how can people connect with you and the podcast and everything else?
I mean, really, speaking of portals, the portal really to everything is the main website, which is emeraldanvil.com. And at emeraldanvil.com, you can connect to the podcast, which is on like every podcast service in the world that I know of. You know, you can pre-order the novel, you can pre-order the game, you can learn about the NFT game if you're into that sort of stuff. So emeraldanvil.com, I think, is the starting place. We did start Lucy as a fictional character, started her website this last episode, blackberryblackvelvetfairies.com. So you can go that, but that's pretty limited right now because information is not going to go onto that website until Lucy discovers it. But emeraldanvil.com, short answer.
Hey, brilliant.
Thank you, Claire. We appreciate you taking time to talk to us.
Thank you so much.
It's been great.
Hello, welcome back. Thank you for listening to the end of the podcast. Thank you to my wonderful guests, Greg and Gretchen. Really enjoyed speaking with them about their thoughts about fairies. It was great to hear about Greg's inspiration for the Emerald Anvil universe being the creative play that he engaged in with his two young children. And I encourage you to make time in your everyday lives to make some time to connect with nature, to explore it, to find out more about any particular area of nature that you're interested in. You never know where these paths can lead you. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Claire Silverwand, and this has been the Fairy Whispering Podcast. The podcast is researched, produced, and hosted by me. The theme song is Oxygen by Third Girl from the Left. This is an independent show, so please support by subscribing, sharing with a friend, and leaving a 5-star review. Also, if you or someone you know has had a fairy encounter or another supernatural experience, you can send me your story to claire@fairywhisperer.co.uk, and I spell fairy the archaic way on my website, and that's F-A-E-R-Y. Thank you, goodbye, and see you next time. And remember to keep your heart open and let the wisdom of the fae and nature guide you.